So thank you for joining. We'll get right into talking about Trick or Treat and give you guys an update on what I know. And I'm hoping to get out of this meeting with some finalization and a decision that we can announce to the community tomorrow. So a couple things. We had a Central Ohio Mayors and Managers Association meeting last week. And as of that time, Columbus said that we're going ahead with Trick or Treat on Thursday, October 29th from 6 to 8. I believe other suburbs are planning to do the same within Central Ohio. And so based upon what we last discussed 2 weeks ago, my draft proposal was that we would do Thursday the 29th from 5:30 to 7 with the recommendations that we had talked about as a group last time. And those were that participants, including adults, would wear masks, that candy would be handed out at the sidewalk, that there would people would we would ask that they would chalk or tape their sidewalk in 6-foot intervals, and a please take one kind of no hands-off distribution at the sidewalk. Recommended that different types of candy were separated into different containers so kids weren't rifling around for different types of candy. We encouraged even broader like candy tables if people could do that. And then Halloween Patrol would have extra masks for people who didn't bring their own. That tracks pretty well with the Franklin County Public Health Guidelines, which I have, I forwarded these to our public health folks. Another one, I'm sorry, that we talked about at council was, I said that we were encouraging households to stick together and not have kids sort of group up and form clusters. Now, there's a piece that's missing from ours that shows up in the CDC guidelines, which first off, CDC says, if you want to go low risk, don't have anything. But they have moderate and high risk. High risk for them is do what you normally do. That's high risk. Makes sense. Moderate risk matches a lot of what we said, except they focus a lot on one-way traffic, one-way flow of people, which is something we could accommodate. One idea I had is we could ask residents when they're marking those 6 feet with chalk, they could mark, you know, if they're on the east side of the street, they could mark a south arrow. If they're west side of the street, they could mark a north arrow every 6 feet, and that we would have a similar sort of idea for east-west running streets. It does require a little bit of navigation expertise, but I feel like not too much to ask. And I feel like if enough people did it, that it would, the idea would come across we might have a hope of that actually occurring. So I'm not super optimistic that that would be very, very well followed, but it's an idea and it's worth trying. So that's where we're at with it. And I wanted to open it up to a discussion from our public health folks.
Hey everyone, this is Jenny. I think the only thing that is not on this that's on a lot of guidance is just that reminder for flu shots. Obviously, we don't want to, or we can't, like, check everybody, but just send out a reminder to get your flu shot 2 weeks ahead of time, just so we don't see that sort of convergence of flu.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Maybe we could give out flu shots while people are getting candy.
It's like a treat. Candy, it's like a treat.
Get a flu shot.
Jenny, did I read from Franklin County Public Health that they recommend 2 weeks before Halloween getting your flu shot?
You do, yes.
Thank you.
At least. Like, you need a month to get full immunity from the flu shot, so at least 2 weeks gives you a little boost. It's hard to, I mean, not everybody will be on that schedule, but which is, I think, probably, Jenny, right, the reason why you chose 2 weeks is sort of like splitting the difference a little bit on that, but.
Yeah, I'm just getting a great time to get them, but they are available. Highly encourage.
That dog sounds vicious.
So I think on the flu shot thing that, you know, I don't know if you're planning on including some information about where you can go to get that.
Sure.
In the blast, that might be really helpful. So I don't know if they're giving them out at the health department, CVS, and, you know, if they've got the right doses and they've got stock at Bexley Urgent Care, things like that, just to give people more guidance with what to do with that information. I think this year you might find people that normally wouldn't get a flu shot may be more inclined to do so.
Can I ask a really ignorant non-epidemiologist sort of question as a layperson, which is, would this recommendation not be the same any year? It's just that this year we kind of have people's focus on public health, or is there something different about the flu this year?
No, it's the same recommendation every year, but I think you've got attention in a different way this year.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we really want to avoid people getting the flu in addition to possibly getting the COVID-19. I mean,
Right. Yeah, it's this year is very, Ben, this year is critically important for everyone to get it because it's going to be very confusing during the season whether you have flu or COVID. And you want to, if you've had a flu shot, our hope is you'll be able to know that. That's part of it.
Gotcha. I got a letter from a resident that said, I really hope you're not doing it this year. The CDC has said it's dangerous and shouldn't be done, which is consistent with what the CDC said about doing it kind of normally. I don't want to put you guys in a difficult position to say that, like, you endorse the idea of trick-or-treat, but rather, do you feel that we're taking necessary steps to mitigate risk, and do you feel like the risk is, last time we talked about it, this is an open air event. You know, it's, if you're going to have any event, this one could be done safely. Is that still the feeling? I just want to make sure I'm accurately reflecting what I'm hearing from you guys.
I think when you look at the CDC.
Go ahead, Roger.
I was just saying, when you look at the CDC, again, traditional going up to a door and getting a handout, they consider, as I mentioned a month ago, as a high risk event. But doing it the way we're talking about, we've mitigated it down to a modest risk event. If we think that that's, and we make sure that everyone's wearing masks and we're outdoors and we have limited contact, I think that modest is still reasonable to consider.
And in all these decisions, you weigh the risk versus the benefit. When you reduce the risk, when you mitigate it down to a modest or acceptable level, and the benefit of having our children participate in this, which is something that they want, and also putting in the reality that they're probably going to do some part of this in some way, shape, or form, even if we don't approve it, the best we can do is to mitigate the risk down to the lowest level, weigh the risk versus the benefit, and I think that's what we've done, and go ahead with the safest way to allow it to occur.
Just two additional thoughts related to that and reinforcing the same idea. So I also, when I read that letter, happens to be my next door neighbor's comment, I thought, like, maybe this is really crazy. Like if somebody hears this and thinks it's crazy, like, let's reassess, and kind of went through the guidance again and realized that I came to the same conclusion, which is, unlike school, Halloween is optional. If you don't want to participate because it feels too high risk for you, like, you could stay home. If your household does not find this to be a tolerable risk, you can opt out of this. It's challenging if you have small kids. I recognize that, but we haven't made those decisions in any other space. It's the same as sports. Like, a lot of families their kids are playing sports. The idea that Halloween is too risky, but sports are not, and our community has endorsed sports, like, that seems unusual to me. One other situation just related to the one-way streets. I agree very much, Ben, that if we can do it, it would be nice, because it's the one part of this process where in just like being a citizen in Bexley, you often come closer to people than you would otherwise intend to be when you're trying to pass them on the sidewalk. And if we're going to have family groups around, people passing one another on the sidewalk, if we could close the streets, that would even be better. Of course, we can't do that. But the one-way street idea, I really like. And then just the last point about actual exposure, even if a person with COVID or many of them were walking around in the street trick-or-treating, remember you have to have 15 minutes of cumulative exposure to that person before it counts as an exposure that needs to be contact traced. So the kinds of sidewalk crossing exposures that will happen with Halloween, no matter what we set up ahead of time, they don't adhere to the public health guidance for what leads to sort of an exposure event likely to lead to transmission. So there are exceptions to that. If someone coughs right in your candy bowl, you know, of course it could be a real exposure, but in general, that 15-minute rule is a helpful one to think about when you're thinking about the risk mitigation.
So okay. I'm just going to jump in and then I'm going to have to jump off, but you know, to me, there's risk first to the trick-or-treater, maybe not a huge one, and then there's risk to the person who's putting out the candy, and maybe not a big one if they put it out and then they just don't stand right there as kids pick it up. There will also be people who choose not to participate, and so you don't want people coming up and ringing their doorbell. I mean, so if they put out food, they put out candy, and that's one thing. And then, you know, we all went through this thing where we go out grocery shopping and then we wipe down everything we got with, you know, antibacterial, antiviral wipes. I mean, are we recommending that the kids, when they pick up their candy, wipe down every piece of candy they pick up? Because it is possible that that could be an issue.
By the way, the recommendations, Dan, have changed. That was a mistake and idea, and you don't need to wipe down all that stuff.
Okay, no, I know that.
You know that. So the kids don't need to wipe down their candy. I mean, that's not how we transmit this disease.
I'll say Franklin County Public Health guidance, though, recommends that trick-or-treaters carry hand sanitizer use it.
Yeah, hand sanitizer, right. Yep.
Okay. Anything else that we should add? I added a couple of things to this conversation. One, I think we should have some messaging out there that says, like, look, if a household's not participating, either as a distributor or for whatever reason, like, we're not going to be harassing those people. That's cool. We're going to be tolerant of that. We're respectful. And then also, you know, we can create, like, basically yard signs that we would put out day of or in advance that also highlights what that one-way route is. And maybe it's at the entrance of a block, every block, and halfway through every block, so that it's clear to people, and it will supplement whatever people can do in their own markings.
Of course, one of the things is that,
and that wouldn't be too big of a deal.
The people who are doing the trick-or-treating are often not from Bexley, so we'd have to have very clear markings for people who are coming in for trick-or-treat from outside that they know what to do.
I have a logistics question. Would it be beneficial to ask which households will be passing out candy so we sort of have knowledge of, you know, spaces that we should hit or have more signage there, things like that?
I don't think the data would be great. I think we should just assume it's going to be widespread and we'll get some signage out everywhere. I have a feeling you're asking that because you're thinking of ways to reduce the amount of material that we're creating for one-way use, one-time use.
I'm also thinking I don't want kids to walk around the entire city only to find like five households are passing out candy because everyone else is too scared to.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to hear a lot of people on social media saying, I'm not going to participate in this. I think we're going to find that that there will be plenty of people not participating in it, but I think that there will be plenty of people that are participating in some way, shape, or form.
I got to check more cards.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Have we considered having, because if everything is on the sidewalk, a lot of the time spent is the going up and back, you know, walking up the pathway and going to the door and blah, 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 blah. So I think it will be a more efficient process. Have we considered reducing the time so that it, you know, limits that traffic or something like that, or I don't know.
Yeah, Sam asked me that question earlier today, and my gut response was that I'm concerned about doing that because it potentially puts more people, it's like it creates a higher density in terms of just like more people are trying to cram it into a smaller period of time. That might be bad math. That might be an incorrect assumption. So we already have a shorter window than the other communities.
Would we be able to give a suggestion that, I'm just throwing out just ideas that may not be worth mm-hmm. anything, but a suggestion that for the younger children, maybe, you know, encourage them to go earlier, which happens kind of right now anyway.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the older ones coming at the end, I think that we do have a lot of folks that come from surrounding communities, but that tends to be later in the evening, and the earlier in the evening, that 5:30 to 6 o'clock tends to be almost entirely Bexley, at least on my street. I'm on Brentwood, and we get anywhere from 150 to 300 children every year. So, and I would say that pretty consistently, it's the Bexley kids, the younger ones, from 5:30 to 6, and between 6 and 6:30, you start seeing a change, and then 6:30 to 7, it becomes much more the older kids from Bexley and surrounding communities. And I don't know if that's consistent with other people's experience.
It tracks with what I've seen. I think it's slightly inconsistent with us saying households should stick together. So I'm not, I think maybe it's something like, to the extent practical, think about, you know, limiting the amount of time you're out, you know, younger kids out a little earlier. Like we could message that.
Yeah. Out earlier and earlier. I think they're going to get through a lot quickly.
Yeah.
One other thing, Ben, I think we should say is to encourage people who are at high risk or have high-risk children to not do in-person trick-or-treating this year. That would be,
yes.
I mean, it goes, I mean, I'm going to say it goes without saying, but it doesn't always. So just say, hey, this year we understand if you are at high risk, if you're, please do, you know, this is a time not to participate.
I have another goes without saying, but let's say it anyway, is please no parties. Is that, I'm not worried about people getting COVID during trick-or-treating, right. But there are likely to be transmissions in the basement parties that happen mm-hmm. before and after trick-or-treat. I mean, it's against the rules we already have. It's not like we're saying don't do something on this one night. You're already not supposed to have the party. So.
And I will say this is mostly in like our guidance. I don't know necessarily if it needs to be in yours, but just a reminder, you know, if you are in quarantine or isolation, like participate. I mean, we realistically thought of it because I can see occasionally somebody being like, oh, I'm at quarantine. I'm still in my house. But that's, no.
Yeah, like the Miami University.
Yes, right? If you have active COVID, please do not pass out candy.
Yeah, please don't have 30 people in your house. I was wondering if there's anything we can do for families who are high risk that may still want to participate. Maybe this is really going above and beyond, but is there something where we could deliver? Like, you know, they get booed, right? You know what that is, right? Where you leave a candy on the, and you leave a little sign saying you've been booed, and you know, they get something. So if they're not participating, they still get something. And that might be something that, you know, could go out and could, I don't know, Elizabeth, I'm giving you a job to do, but just wondering if that's something, you know, if people wanted to kind of say, yes, we would like to do this or something, I don't know.
There is a, I'd have to review it again, but one of our police officers had an idea for something called trunk or treat, where it has police cruiser full of candy and I don't really know how that would work, but. Well, maybe we can work
it's
something out.
It's on the high risk category for CDC. They say don't do trunk or treat.
Okay. Well, maybe there's a super safe alternative to that that we could somehow workshop. I like the idea of creating alternate fun ideas for those who choose not to participate in the traditional. And that's something that our fun team can work on.
Okay, two things that I'm thinking of. Trunk or treat, what if we had because I really love the idea of engaging police in the community, right? So what if we had a cruiser parked somewhere with the trunk open? It's in essence the table, right? It's the table of candy. The officer could be 6 feet away. Is that maybe not a possibility? I don't know.
I think it's the same concept where you're gathering, there's gatherings, there's lines, maybe there's, if it were part of just a normal block and, but even then I think it would create a draw and an unusual, a draw above and beyond.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And just another thought, cause I know how many times I think I have my sanitizer with me and I don't, or we run out because I don't realize how low we are in the bottle. Could we have our Halloween patrollers also have sanitizer?
Like to give a squirt or to give away the whole bottle?
Oh, to give a squirt. Yeah, not like extra bottles, but yeah, just to give a squirt if anybody is desperate enough and needs it.
Or what
doesn't
about
the, doesn't the risk of being close to Halloween patrol person outweigh the non-benefit of hand sanitizer?
That's higher math. I can't figure that out. I'll leave that to you.
You know how they have those things at road races that are like on a stand and it has like four sides and you just go up and get a squirt, like that are, they're not human operated. They're just like a, you know, those things. Can we put some of those around at like busy intersections?
At intersections.
I've seen those like in parks and things. And I think if that would be great to have, if it's doable. No one seems to want to.
Okay.
So, and I may have missed this. The Halloween patrol is still a good idea with having the college students around, right?
And background there, Halloween patrol in Bexley is largely volunteer staffed by Capital students. Usually the big partiers, actually.
Yeah, the highest risk.
Right.
Right.
I think it is like literally fraternities and sororities, right? They're getting their hours in.
Yeah.
So
I'm just curious as to whether that's a good idea or not. I don't know.
They also don't tend to interact.
That would not be the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would not be the best group to recruit from demographically this year.
From a COVID perspective, but obviously from a getting volunteers perspective, it's the best demographic we have.
Well, then the second best demographic is our senior citizen population, which again would not be a good demographic to draw from.
I feel like there might be other service groups though, right? Like other cores of people that are more like past the college age, but not yet into the high risk senior age. I don't know, sort of the Harmony Project group, yeah. But Harmony not actual Project Harmony Project because they're all over, but.
The realtors?
I would say we go after all sorts of demographics for that, high school students and otherwise, but the ones that we've had the most success with in terms of numbers is.
Yeah, you might want to contact the person who organizes National Honor Society because you definitely need service hours for that. At the high school
party happening, then that's a great idea.
Well, the question still, I guess, would be is even if we want to look at getting other potential volunteers, and again, not that we've had a lot of success with those, but we should continue to look at them, is whether or not that also means we are prohibiting college students or whether we're just looking at other options as well. And if we get college students, so be it.
So the students in this environment, they're in the open air, they're wearing masks, the other people are wearing masks, and they don't, honestly, having observed these students who are great doing this over the years, they sort of just walk around, keep an eye on things, call if they see an issue, but they're not like stopping and interacting with trick-or-treaters in the past. That's not what I've observed. So it does feel like you add all that together and we really aren't creating a high-risk situation, but
and we can tell the students, you can tell the students, please, you know, the situation not to have the usual interaction or less interaction. That seems reasonable.
If we choose, I can also reach out to the volunteer network.
That's a great idea. I think it would be great to try to engage any of those networks in the first place, and then, see what we get from Capital as well.
And I like Abby's idea, by the way, about the Harmony Project, because my wife's in it, and so are many others looking for service things they can do. And that's seems like a pretty nice one and easy one. And most of them are either young or healthy or both.
As long as they don't sing while they're volunteering.
The average age of a Harmony Project member is a 55-year-old white woman named Diane. So we do need to Yeah.
That is good. That is a healthy age, and that's a healthy thing for, that's a high, non-high risk.
And Diane especially is a healthy name. I think I do have, Roger, I think I do have an email of Harmoniers in the
Vexley. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'd be happy to reach out.
Yeah. See if some of them want to help.
And there's Victoria. Hi, Victoria. We're going to recruit you to be a Halloween patroller.
I'll do it. I'm over the, my name's not Diane, and I got some other variances, but.
You and me both, but it's all good.
Okay. Anything else that we should add to this? I feel like we have a pretty good set of ideas here.
Just a quick question, not being in Bexley. How typically do the parents go with most of the children? Like, obviously not high schoolers, but is it usually a pretty family or do people?
Yeah, but the kids okay. then branch off into okay. their own little clusters as well, while the adults stay back and drink stuff out of their Starbucks cups.
Yeah, the red
and that's kind of what you picture probably.
I think from about fourth or fifth grade on up, I feel like they don't really go with their parents. They tend to go in clusters of friends. Abby, you've got that age. That's how it was when my daughter was that age.
Yep, yeah, that's exactly right.
Is it? And I know we say in there, you know, to go with families, just like as a reminder to, you know, if you would normally let your kids go out, I think a lot of this is really just going to be on like the parents to kind of monitor and make sure there's not 34 kids hanging out together getting candy.
Yeah, I think we should almost break this out into like two messaging, like the simple messaging so people aren't overwhelmed, which is go with your family, wear a mask. And if you're distributing the candy, get your flu shot. This is gonna get long real quickly, but those like key points, and then here's you know some greater detail. I feel like there are a couple of these things that are like if everybody did them would make a huge difference, you know.
So can I ask a question? I apologize for joining late. I see that these are requirements/recommendations, and so are they requirements or are they really just recommendations?
I think we're going to word them as highly recommended is my gut. I just feel it feels a little weird to have like a requirement around some of this stuff. I could be wrong, but I'd like to probably skew this towards a strongly recommended, urged, highly recommended guidelines. I don't know.
We already have a masking
requirement
though, as for if you're going to be within 6 feet, right? So.
Yeah. And I could make it very clear that this is an event that we consider would have a mask requirement because you cannot reasonably keep 6 feet away during trick or treat, even under this modified order. So therefore, to be clear, it is required that you wear a mask. Is that what you're going with?
That was certainly one of them. And do we, I apologize for not knowing this, but what's our gathering limitation right now in the city? You know, 100 people, I can't remember where we are.
We don't have our own.
Just
piggybacked off of what the state or the state that has expanded it.
Yep.
I can't either.
It's pretty high, yeah.
It's pretty big, yeah. So. Yep. And I don't even think those gatherings are really defined clearly enough to say like within a certain period of space or this type of density. So I don't think that this would count as a gathering if you have disparate small groups of people moving around.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm a little worried about it in terms of people following the recommendations, but I hear what you're saying about your comfort level in terms of mandating all of this.
Well, and we don't have an enforcement mechanism.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're prepared to even try to enforce it if we had a mechanism. I just don't think that's
right.
I think that if, from what you guys have said in the past, if enough people are following these recommendations and enough people are doing the right thing,
we could,
it's going to create a safe environment.
And so the volunteers will be asked to sort of encourage people to stay 6 feet apart, that kind of thing, or just watch for trouble? More along the normal lines.
It'd probably be more along the normal lines. I mean, if they see something that's really unsafe, I think we would probably give them a couple additional things to look out for. But, you know, they're not an enforcement mechanism either. And yeah. So they're there to just be eyes and ears in case there's something bad and something dangerous occurring. And that would extend to, you know, if they come across a party where there's like 100 people hanging out in the front yard, then that's an issue. And so I think there could be some select examples that we give them, like, here, if you see this, please let us know, because there is some unsafe behavior that it could occur.
Okay, thank you, I appreciate it. Sorry for being late.
In that case, Ben, would you want to give them guidance to call some kind of Bexley 411 to, you know, like have a drive-by or something with someone with a little more teeth? I don't know.
I really apologize. I just got distracted by being tagged on the buzz, unfortunately. So sorry, what was that? Phone. I'm going to turn it upside down.
I was just saying that would you want to give the volunteers at Halloween Patrol some guidance that if they did come across like something unsafe, rather than put them in a situation of, you know, having college kids trying to kind of enforce something that maybe adults, you know, that like parents or whatever, that instead, who may or may not be drinking, to instead just kind of give them the guidance to have the police do a drive-by or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're not ever putting our Halloween patrol, unless Mike can correct this if I'm wrong, because he manages this, but we're not putting them in an enforcement position in the past, and we wouldn't do that this time either. Mike, does your microphone work today, or is this the computer with the microphone?
It works, but I couldn't quite hear you for some reason.
I think I was clarifying Halloween patrol does not enforce anything. They're just eyes and ears. They're not an enforcement mechanism.
Yeah, they're not enforcer. They'll call PD or the rec department if there's an issue that needs to be addressed. They're not really enforcement.
Is that the new laptop with the microphone that works?
No, that's getting set up. This is the old laptop. The microphone works on this one. The keyboard just doesn't work sometimes.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Hey, Ben.
Mike has a lot of laptops. Yep.
Elizabeth just put in the chat, and I think it's a really good idea. I'm taking your glory, Elizabeth. Would it be helpful to have the school share this information in their letters that the parents get, as well as the blast? You know, because our school-age kids are the ones who are going to be trick-or-treating, so it might be helpful to have this guidance in that as well.
That's a great idea, along with the preschools, Jeffrey Mansion, JCC, Bump. Yeah. St. Catherine's.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
Okay. And Sam, if you could create, Franklin County Public Health has a great one pager on this that I'll send to you, but if you could use that and sort of put a little bit of a spin on it for some of the stuff we've talked about it. That would be cool.
You got it.
And I'll put that in the chat. All right. Anything else? I know you guys are loving talking about this. You keep going. All right. I will incorporate this. Sam and I will incorporate on what we've been talking about into our communications.